Hey friends, Extreme Rules is this Sunday. If you want the very best coverage of Extreme Rules online and an audio review of the show afterwards, make sure to sign up for ProWrestling.net membership. You can get ad-free coverage of everything in wrestling on ProWrestling.net, plus some of the best audio you're going to find anywhere. For details on ProWrestling.net membership, head over to ProWrestling.net and click the membership link for as low as $5.50 a month or $7.50 if you just want to try it out and see what it's like for a month. You can become a ProWrestling.net member. This is the Pretentious Wrestling Podcast, a production of ProWrestling.net. I'm Will, he's Jake. You can follow us on Twitter at Will Pruitt and at Barnett Jake. On today's show, Will and Jake preview the WWE Extreme Rules pay-per-view. So Jake, this might stun you, but did you know that there is a professional wrestling pay-per-view on this Sunday called Extreme Rules?
You know, I've been watching Raw every Monday, and they keep telling me about it, but they have yet to make me feel really excited about it. And I don't know if that's just a function of me kind of in a funk with wrestling, kind of that post-WrestleMania hangover, or if it's just the fact that the booking has been so lackluster. But it's been a rough sell for me to get really excited about Extreme Rules, especially with Braun Strowman out, who was like the one beacon of hope on Raw for a while there.
He was the bright, shining light of destruction.
Yes, definitely. I was really into what he was doing. I was legitimately bummed out when he was hurt.
Yeah, no, I think Braun Strowman's done really great work and will continue to when he returns. And hopefully the reports from Pro Wrestling Sheets, Ryan Satin, are correct, and he is back in with like a 2-month timeline, and it's not a 6-month timeline the way WWE has made it sound on the air. Fingers crossed on that one.
Yeah, that'd be good for an angle too, because you could make him look superhuman coming back so quickly, much like they do with Cena.
I was gonna say they call that the Cena, and he points to his scar. Yeah. So let's start with this show kind of from the bottom and work our way up. Rich Swann and Sasha Banks versus Noam Dar and Alicia Fox. Jake, have you been watching the 205 Live?
You know, I do generally watch 205 Live on either Thursday evenings or Friday evenings, so I haven't watched this week's show yet. But I have been...
Sasha Banks was in a lot of sparkles.
That's... I did see some GIFs that she looked very sparkly.
Yeah.
But I think they've done, you know, they've done some decent work on this... on this tag match. I mean, it hasn't been terribly exciting, but I like everybody involved in general. And so it was kind of an easy sell for me to get excited about it. So I'm hoping they can, you know, exceed my expectations and put on a decent match.
Yeah. I think this could be a lot of fun. You're going to see probably Sasha do something stupid and get caught by Noam Dar and Alicia Fox at one point, and probably Rich Swann. I could see her getting a big dive in here. This should be some fun. I think Swann and Sasha Banks win this because it's a mixed tag, and why wouldn't the babyfaces win? You agree?
Yeah, I don't see any reason to go in another direction here. I think, you know, Swann, he's a likable guy, and I think he's benefiting from having Sasha with him, because they're you know, the dance routine they did on Monday was pretty funny, and it seems like they're enjoying it. So it's fun to watch them. I'm assuming they're going to get a win and do a lot of smiling.
I think they are the smiliest people, especially Rich Swann. That dude, win and smile. Neville versus Austin Aries in a submission match for the Cruiserweight Championship. They've kind of made this seem like the last shot for Aries while Neville is champion. I think I let it pass. I don't think I pulled the trigger on Austin Aries yet, because I do not see the heel that they are building in the Cruiserweight division to take on Aries after, say, what would probably be a TV rematch with Neville. And I think there are some baby faces that can take on Neville, including Rich Swann, even though they've been there and done that. I could also see Neville against Akira Tozawa here pretty soon, since they just got Tozawa out of his program with Brian Kendrick.
Yeah, I'm with you. I don't think you put the title on Aries as a babyface. I think you wait for the right moment to turn him heel on somebody that they built up as a fresh babyface, and have them have him capture a championship that way. Because as much as I really enjoy watching Austin Aries work, I think he's very sharp in the ring, and I've always enjoyed his style. I just don't think he's a particularly compelling babyface as a character. And so I think it would be a wrong move for them to put the championship on him and have his first sort of foray as the face of the cruiserweight division be as a babyface, which is not where I think his greatest potential is.
I would agree with that. Matt and Jeff Hardy versus Cesaro and Sheamus, a cage match for the Raw Tag Team Championship. Do you remember? I want to say it was Survivor Series 2001. There was the weird cage match. I think it was Dudley's versus Hardy's to unite the WCW and WWF tag titles on this show. And there was a cage match with these two teams where the Hardys, like the crux of the match was Matt Hardy escaped the cage, but Jeff didn't. And then Jeff had to fight off both Dudleys inside the cage to try to win, and eventually got pinned. It was really, really strange. Do you think they repeat that?
Boy, that's pretty obscure, dude. the callback, I don't think they would get that like obsessive about it, but it would be an interesting finish for sure. I don't think many people would remember it.
I would.
But you would be just like doing dance moves in your living room. Just like, yep, they pulled it off. But I think the Hardy Boys retain here. I mean, I just don't see a compelling reason to move the championships onto Cesaro and Sheamus. I think there's a lot of star power left in the Hardy Boys retaining, and I think they want to move them on to the Revival or somebody next. I'm not exactly sure, but that will really depend on what happens with the fallout from whatever they're doing with Enzo and Cass. But it's time for the Hardy Boys to evolve a little bit as characters, but I don't think they need to lose a championship to do that.
I actually think Cesaro and Sheamus win this. While I think the Hardys versus the Revival might be a direction they go in, Cesaro and Sheamus have won exactly zero parts of this feud. They, 2 months in a row, have lost singles matches. Each of them has lost to each Hardy Boy. They have lost 6-man tags. They've lost the one tag title match they've had. At some point, Cesaro and Sheamus have to win, and especially when the Hardys and Ambrose beat The Miz and Cesaro and Sheamus this past week on Raw, I was like, okay, they've got to freaking win at the pay-per-view, right? So I think just based on that and the absurd amount of losing Cesaro and Sheamus have done, I think that Cesaro and Sheamus pick up the titles here.
You may be right. I think it really does depend on how this whole, I mean, they really spent a lot of time with Cass on Monday. It seems like they're setting him up to either interfere in something or however this shakes out. But
I'm ready for the big Cass singles push.
Yeah, that could be. I mean, they seem to frame it in a way where he could be the one attacking Enzo as well, but we'll see how it plays out. But I it's not a high confidence pick for me that the Hardys retain. But I just, with the pops that they've been getting on TV, it just seems like it would be hard for them to avoid just letting them hold on to the championships. But I see where you're going. I mean, they could extend the feud by moving the titles at this point if they wanted to.
Jake, are you blackmailing Kurt Angle? What do you have on him?
No, I wish I would have thought of it. No. No, I don't know. That whole story, the threads that they were pulling on Monday were probably one of the most interesting things about the show. So I'm hoping the payoff isn't terrible.
If anything, we have now the meme of Kurt Angle looking at his phone and looking disgusted. And that I am all about.
Yeah, like of all the stupid things Kurt Angle has done in his career, including in WWE, like what could you possibly have on that phone that would embarrass? You know what I mean? Like it has to be pretty bad for Kurt to be disgusted.
Yeah, I mean, that would be. Maybe he was watching Scott Steiner come back. Like, Corey Graves was like, you would not believe what your fellow Main Event Mafia member is doing right now.
Yeah, all I ever think about with embarrassing things in Kurt Angle is that weird segment he did with Booker T and Charmel where he talked about bestiality for some weird reason.
Oh, man.
Wasn't that terrible?
I had blocked that out. Oh, no. Okay.
Yeah, like maybe somebody just showed him a YouTube video of that and he was just horrified.
This could ruin me. It's on the network.
Yeah, still, like, it could ruin him.
Alexa Bliss versus Bayley in a kendo stick on a pole match. We talked a lot about the Raw Women's Division and this match in particular on yesterday's show. But Alexa Bliss and Bayley, I think we're in agreement that Alexa should win. Do you think that they do something where Bayley does get some modicum of revenge with a big kendo stick beatdown? I assume that's the big spot of this match, is Bayley goes crazy with a kendo stick.
Yeah, I'm unclear on the rules of the match. Like, if, like, does, so the winner the person who retrieves the kendo stick is the only one that gets to use it? If the other person steals it from them, are they disqualified? Like, they never really.
I don't think so, because that's never been the rule in the blank on a pole match. It's always, you get the object first, you get to use it. But if the other person can take it from you, which they always do, they can use it as well.
Okay, so yeah, I guess the logic of it just never quite made sense to me. But I'm with you. I think we may see, you know, Bayley get some satisfying kendo stick shots in to sort of give her fans something to grasp onto. But I think Alexa has to win here. Bayley's just not that engaging as a character at this point. Yeah, and even the life they've tried to breathe into her. With Alexa playing the mean girl and trying to get her sympathy, just it doesn't seem to have worked.
Yeah, they aren't having Alexa quite play the mean girl, and they don't have enough built up in Bayley. I mean, by the time you had this kind of happening with Bayley in NXT, she had been around for a long period of time, or was a minor character. She wasn't the lead character in the division the way she is here, and that's, I think, one of the many mistakes with what they're doing right now with Bayley. So I think Alexa wins this and moves on to better feuds. And hopefully they find a feud they can put Bayley in that builds a character for Bayley. Let's actually let Bayley fight and overcome something. Let us get to know her.
If only there was a monster on the show that could make her an underdog. Maybe that seems to be logical to me.
Yeah, I mean, and if only they had put that monster on TV and built her up for the last month for just for this sort of occasion. Maybe a monster dedicated to keeping Alexa Bliss as champion as well.
Interesting idea.
Yeah. Dean Ambrose defends the Intercontinental title against The Miz. If Dean Ambrose loses, he is disqualified, which must be the most extreme match stipulation I have ever heard. Pause for sarcasm.
So if Ambrose is disqualified, he loses the championship.
Yes.
And this is the only just regular singles match on the card, right? Is it the only non-crazy stipulation, I guess, at this point?
Well, the mixed tag doesn't really have a crazy stipulation.
That's true. Yeah.
Crazy stipulation would be like tornado mixed tag. Rich Swann's going to punch Alicia Fox in the mouth, which I would be a little uncomfortable with.
That would be alarming. Yeah. I think The Miz has lost a lot of steam, to be honest with you, since moving over to Raw. Like, I just don't have the same.
They just call that moving to Raw now.
Yeah. The same feeling of optimism about his character. And it just doesn't seem like the he's given enough time on the microphone to really, and maybe it's just the way he's written too. They may have somebody on SmackDown that was working with him that just may have a better handle on what makes people hate The Miz, but he just hasn't been as effective on the microphone on Raw. And I think, Ambrose, he might be doing slightly better on Raw, and I don't know if that's necessarily due to the writing or his own motivation or what factors may be involved there. But he seems a little bit more energetic than he was at the tail end of his SmackDown run. And so, overall, with the way that this feud has played out, I have to imagine Ambrose retains here, or perhaps they have a feud partner that, you know, in the waiting for Ambrose that they want to have disqualify him here just so they can, you know, move the title onto the Miz and then, you know, have something else in mind for Ambrose. But honestly, I don't have a whole lot of feel as to which direction they're going to go. It just doesn't seem like either one of these guys has a lot of momentum at this point.
I think part of it is they did this entire feud on SmackDown, ended it, moved on, and then moved over. Like, they were feuding with each other for a couple months on SmackDown, then they move over to Raw and spend a couple months feuding with each other. It's probably time to end it at this point. I actually think The Miz wins the title here. I think they can do a lot more with The Miz as Intercontinental Champion, and you can kind of get Ambrose ready for whatever's next for him, which I'm still partially holding out hope for a Summer Shield reunion, because my God, do the Rollins and Reigns, do all three of these characters need it? Like, none of them are where they should be. None of them mean what they should mean right now. And
I guess not to get off too far on a tangent, but yeah. I see the three of them and I'm like, would just slapping them back together do anything?
Oh yeah.
I mean, I know it would for, like, you know, the initial excitement of it, but if they just go out there and they're cutting the same promos, I mean, it would have to be, a pretty serious retooling of their attitudes in order for it to work. And maybe they're willing to do that, but just sticking the three of them together in their current configuration just makes you go, ah, I don't know. Like, there would have to be some pretty significant changes to what, you know, how they're presented and, you know, what they're motivations are to come back together. I'm still kind of foggy on what that would be at this point.
What if I told you they were all going to wear vests?
You sold. Yeah, I'm right
there. The vests with weird pockets and cargo pants. That's their motivation for getting back together. So let's move on, because I actually think this discussion is a discussion we can have while talking about the five-way as well. Number one contender for the Universal Championship, Reigns, Rollins, Balor, Wyatt, and Samoa Joseph. It is those five guys. It's not an elimination match, so first pin or submission wins. I actually think this is going to be a lot of fun. It's going to be chaotic. It's going to be super enjoyable. But let's talk about Reigns and Rollins, because I just quickly ranked who I expect to win this match, and they are both at the bottom of my list. It's like number four is Rollins, number five is Reigns on who I expect to win. And I just think you put Rollins, Reigns, and Ambrose together, you give them even a semi-compelling antagonist. I'm not holding out hope for something great there, but give them someone to fight against. And I think you've got one heck of a... of a fun summer feud and program. And I think it's as simple as believe in the Shield promos. You let them get a little bit riled up and you let those three really show anger and let the fans get behind them. And then you turn Ambrose, say, the night after SummerSlam.
But who are they feuding against in your...
The Titus brand.
The Titus brand.
I have no idea. That's the missing piece of my puzzle.
I think the motivation for them coming together has to be, you know, some major threat emerging that they have to put down, you know, like, but I don't know what that threat is. I mean, we've talked about that before, you know, it's difficult because they haven't built anybody up to really fill that role. But in terms of this five-way match, I kind of have a feeling that it's going to be Bray Wyatt, just because he's the odd man out here. Like, he doesn't really fit. And if they're killing time awaiting, Brock Lesnar's, or the feud that he's eventually going to have with Braun Strowman, or at least we assume, it seems like an odd pairing to put Lesnar and Wyatt together. But I think there would be enough funk to it where, you know, it would feel original. It would feel new. You know, we've never seen, Bray Wyatt and Paul Heyman, you know, kind of cut promos on one another. But I think it would be
literally my promo nightmare.
Is
so
it really?
Many words with so little being said.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it would be an interesting diversion while they, you know, wait for Strowman to heal up or come back. But I really don't know then what happens to the other four guys in this match.
So I should ask you, what do you think the SummerSlam match is for Brock Lesnar? Because I think it's Lesnar versus Strowman. I think Strowman comes back, murders someone, and like marches down to the ring with their head. And Braun Strowman and Brock Lesnar is made for SummerSlam.
Does he punt the head like a football? Because that'd be fantastic.
Absolutely. But he uses their leg to punt it. He has also pulled their leg off.
Perfect. It's like a Gene Snitsky like on steroids.
Yep.
Even though I think Snitsky was probably on steroids.
I was going to say, that sounds redundant.
I think SummerSlam is going to be Strowman and Lesnar because I think it's their best match at this point.
I think it might be the most compelling match in the whole gosh darn company.
Yeah, I mean,
especially Lesnar, for Lesnar.
Lesnar needs somebody that feels like a threat for him to feel interesting at this point. And I talked with Jason about this. It's hard for me to get excited just about the idea of Brock Lesnar appearing anymore because it's like, okay, you know, he's going to come out there and stand there.
He's going to bounce in the ring
with Heyman. He's going to bounce and smile and make other odd facial expressions while Heyman intimidates people on the microphone. And then, you know, he's going to throw a bajillion German suplexes and an F5 or two, and then he's going to, you know, go cash paychecks because that's kind of what Brock Lesnar has been doing for, I don't know, 2 years now or maybe even more. I'm not entirely certain when the cutoff was where it started becoming repetitive. But, you know, they need somebody who feels like a legitimate threat, who can throw him off his game and make him, you know, sort of go into the toolbox and try to break out something new.
Yeah, I think Strowman's a great guy to do that against because you're not going to German suplex Braun Strowman 18 times. You're going to hit him with a couple, but hopefully that's not the plan for a match with Braun. So this match, it's a 1 month filler. It's for WWE Great Balls of Fire, Brock Lesnar versus blank. And I think that's Finn Balor. I actually have Finn at the top of my list. I think they telegraphed it with the promo segment with Heyman. I don't think that they see Finn as a guy who can be a serious threat to Lesnar, so they're not going to save Finn for a Survivor Series or something like that. So I see this as Finn. Bray Wyatt is the second most likely on my list, and then Samoa Joe's there in no man's land in the middle of, like, hey, he wins occasionally. He could do it. But I think Joe... I don't think they see Joe as a guy they seriously want to put Lesnar against at this point. Like, I don't think they're saving it. I don't think they are going to make it happen.
Yeah, I kind of had Balor as my number two. I guess I hesitated to put him at number one because they really should protect him to some degree. You know, he has major star written all over him. And I guess there's an argument to be made that, you know, he could go in there and have an impressive outing against Lesnar and you know, sort of gain something in the process. But my confidence level is so low in WWE protecting him and booking it, you know, with enough nuance to make me believe that I was like, man, maybe it's just best if Lesnar kills Bray Wyatt. But, you know, I guess we'll have to see which direction they go on Sunday.
Yeah, we definitely will. I think either of those is possible. Like, I could absolutely see Finn or Bray walking out as the winner on Sunday. I guess I kind of lean Finn because, again, Bray Wyatt and Paul Heyman shouting words back and forth at each other is my nightmare. So scale of 1 to 10, how excited are you for this show? Like, Sunday night, you're going to sit down, beer in one hand, some sort of food in the other. How excited are you to watch this show?
Right now, I'm at like a 4. Like, I'm just not excited about it. Like, the main event, I expect to be a tremendous wrestling match, but there's just nothing else on the rest of the card that's, you know, that, like, if this was a $60 show, I'd be griping about it. You know, the network makes this stuff a lot easier to sort of swallow as a, okay, well, this is kind of an off month, but it's $10 and I just don't care enough to complain. But it's a very low momentum show for me. I just haven't been a fan of the booking on Raw.
Yeah, I'm in kind of the same place, probably about a 3 or 4. It's, I don't feel like there's a ton of momentum. I don't feel like it's really time for this. I'm happy that we're going to get out of the 5-way just because way too much of WWE wrestling right now is, all right, well, these 6 guys or 5 guys or 5 women are having a match at the pay-per-view. And I need at least one brand to get out of that rhythm as soon as possible because it's driving me a little bit insane. As by the way, okay, quick gripe about WWE TV this week. The opening for, like, the opening of both Raw and SmackDown were the exact same segment. Heel hosts talk show. Heel invite, like, heel has people on talk show. Talk show breaks down into tag match of heels versus babyfaces. That's the exact same segment. Like, Raw and SmackDown were identical for the first 30 minutes.
It's very true.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just kind of drove me insane while watching it. I was like, what is this trash? How dare you, SmackDown writers?
It feels like they, you know, like they draw like house show match segments. Like, how are we going to build to a match on, you know, to start this show? Let's draw something out of a hat. And they both happen to grab the same thing this time.
Oh, it was so bad. Like that was really irritating.
Yeah. I guess, like, you know, when there's a giant overarching angle to the show that, you know, that the, like, Vince and company are very interested in, like, whenever the McMahons were involved in a story, it would be like a 20 some minute promo to open the show that would just put people to sleep in a lot of cases. And I guess, you know, they've avoided that to a degree for quite a while now. So I give them credit for that. But yeah, doing the same segment with different moving pieces, on Monday and then on Tuesday, it just sends the wrong message about how much effort is placed into putting these shows together.
I mean, it sends a really true message about it, though. So there's that. Yeah, I'm in the same boat. I take it you're going to get together with Jason after the show and talk about it on Sunday night?
That is the plan.
Yeah, and I'll be on .NET Live on Monday so people can call and talk about the mysterious, amazing Roman Reigns win in this 5-way then. Just covering my bases there. Yeah. All right, Jake, final question. What's making you happy in wrestling this week?
I was quite happy to see the New Day return for a feud with the Usos. I think the Usos have been a lot of fun on the microphone lately, and I think once they get into a rhythm with New Day, it could be a very entertaining feud. I don't know if the matches are going to be great because I really don't know what kind of chemistry they have. We haven't really seen them together, but I was... immediately had my interest piqued by that return and seeing that kind of gel together right away. So I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah, I really enjoyed that too. I thought that it was kind of a breath of fresh air to have the New Day back. And after rolling my eyes at them for a decent part of the last year, kind of wanting to get their title reign over with and being a little tired of them, it was really fun to have them back. I found myself really enjoying it. I've been watching a little bit of Stardom wrestling, like a Yoshi out of Japan. Am I saying that right? I really suck at pronouncing things.
Are you referring to like...
women's wrestling. Yeah.
Kairi Hojo and then, you know, yeah. The whole... Yep.
I've been like on an Io Shirai kick, and that has been really, really fun. I like...
She's great. She's I can't wait for her to make it to NXT.
Yeah, her in the women's tournament is going to be fire. Like, it will absolutely rule. So I've been trying to, like, catch up on some of her matches and watching her in the ring. I'm just like, damn, she is a really good professional wrestler. Like, gender doesn't matter there. She's better than almost anyone I've ever seen. So, yeah, that has been making me happy over the past week.
Very cool. Yeah. Where are you catching Stardom? Are you finding shows online or?
I'm on the Stardom World service, so paying for it like a sucker.
Well, it's worth it. They deserve the money because they're putting on great shows.
Yeah, it's really surprising. It's as surprising to see the great shows as it is weird to watch a show that looks like it happened inside of a Walmart that they just cleared the shelves out of the way and put a ring in the middle of.
Yeah, the some of the venues are a trip. There's wrestling in some very strange places in Japan, and then on the other end of the spectrum, you have it in like these beautiful, temples and things like that, where it's just like, man, I would love to visit a show there.
We should always have wrestling in churches. That would actually be phenomenal.
Just amazing artwork on the walls and stained mm-hmm. glass, and it's just like, you know, that would be an amazing wrestling venue. And then on the other, you know, the other end, it's like, okay, we're in a convenience store. Wrestling is bizarre that way.
That it is. So that's going to wrap it up for this week, folks. Talk to you again next week.
Thank you for listening to this edition of the Pretentious Wrestling Podcast. For more, please subscribe to this podcast in Apple Podcasts, leave us a rating and a review, show us that you appreciate us, and if you want even more content, check out ProWrestling.net's membership option.